This episode is brought to you by the Big Ears Festival, taking place from March 21st through 24th, 2024 in Knoxville, and featuring an incredible range of performers, from Herbie Hancock to Laurie Anderson to Kurt Vile. BigEarsFestival.org. This episode is brought to you by Atomic Books. Atomic is an independent bookstore full of objects made of paper, vinyl, plastic, and various other actual materials at the edge of time. Specializing in literary comics, small press, art books, and great regional beer at 8 Bar in the back of the store. Come to 3620 Falls Road in Hamden or go to atomicbooks.com. Atomic Books, literary finds for mutated minds.
I think I ran from my room to the living room when I heard the mandolin lick and the solo in the middle. And yeah, it was really exciting in that way. And so that song, I wanted to highlight that song because for me, it sort of set me on my path of like, this is the music that I want to make. And this is really inspiring.
This is Essential Tremors.
I'm Lee Gardner.
I'm Matt Byers. The idea behind this show is to have musicians and other creators talk about songs that shaped who they are. We're not looking for favorite songs, necessarily. We're also not looking for songs that they'd choose to take with them if they were stranded on a desert island. What we're looking for are songs that have significance to them. Songs that might have changed the course of their creative lives, or their lives in general. Clearly born out of the folk and Americana tradition, guitarist and singer-songwriter Sarah Jarosz brings a modern pop sensibility to her work, while also remaining true to the American songbook that values the tenets of both simple harmonies as well as strong melody. In other words, while Jarosz's work is clearly contemporary, at its roots it's steeped in Appalachian folk and the Grand Ole Opry, although it rarely wears that on its sleeve. As part of a supergroup of sorts in the trio, I'm With Her, who won a Grammy for their soulful 2019 song, Call My Name. The group's intricate harmonic arrangements demonstrate both her bandmates and Jarosz's ability to meld spare simplicity with pop hooks. Her new album, Polaroid Lovers, was released on January 26, 2024 by Rounder Records. The first song Jarosz chose as being formative for her was Reasons Why by Nickel Creek.
My first song would have to be Reasons Why by Nickel Creek. mainly because it really was a pivotal turning point in my life and kind of my musical discovery, in me sort of being extremely excited about a song and excited about music and excited about a band. I had started playing mandolin very, very, right before I heard this song. I was about 9 years old, almost 10 years old. And so I was already interested in the mandolin, and mostly my only sort of experience hearing that in recorded form was through Tim O'Brien and the music of Hot Rise. So when I saw the music video for Reasons Why on CMT, it was kind of mind-blowing, and I was like, oh wait, there's young people playing, there's somebody young playing this instrument that I know very little about, but my interest has piqued and now it's cool. So that's cool. Yeah, I have a very, very strong memory of, you know, this was before the internet and before you could just watch any music video on YouTube whenever you wanted. So it was a bigger deal for music videos to be on TV. And I just remember this music video for Reasons Why coming up on CMT and running. I think I ran from my room to the living room when I heard the mandolin lick and the solo in the middle. And yeah, it was really exciting in that way. And so that song, I wanted to highlight that song because for me, it sort of set me on my path of like, this is the music that I want to make. And this is really inspiring.
Did you then try to cover it, to play it, to figure it out on your own? Was that the next move?
It's funny. I didn't actually ever wind up covering that song, but I did play along a lot to that record. And to a lot of the Nickel Creek records. I had one of those, they call them amazing slowdowner machines, where you'd put the CD in and you could slow down the speed, and I would learn a lot of music by ear that way. But yeah, I actually never wound up doing that with this song. I think I just like to jam along to it, sing along to it rather, in my head, and especially on car trips.
Yeah, it's the singing along. I was going to ask about that next, because that seems to be the next way, of course, that people internalize these things and are able to then kind of make them their own, or at least incorporate it into their own work. So when you then started writing your own songs, and this isn't always, of course, a linear connection, I'm aware of, like, you're going consciously, well, here's this part from Reasons Why that I want to include in my song, but, you know, there's something invisible or that you can't really see or feel or touch, but that may actually inform your work. So do you see any even vague connections with your earliest work or maybe even your later work from that song?
Yeah, I mean, I think especially with my first couple records, kind of there's a just the melodic feel, the chordal structure, and you know, it really is, it's very much kind of rooted in bluegrass instrumentation, but not tradition, I think would be the way to say that. You know, it's not a bluegrass song. I think I could say it's almost a kind of a pop song in a way, but played on acoustic instruments. And so I do think that informed my songwriting and, kind of writing from maybe more of a pop sensibility, but with an acoustic instrument in hand. I think that still continues for me to this day. And so it was very influential in that sense.
The second piece of music DeRose chose as being essential to forming her sensibilities was Leveland, by James McMurtry.
Flatter than a tabletop, makes you wonder why they stopped here. Wagon must have lost a wheel, or they lacked ambition one. In the great migration west, separated from the rest, though they might have tried their best, they never caught the sun. So they sunk some roots down in this dirt to keep from blowing off the earth.
Okay, my second song would be, it also, well, music in general for me is always car trip related. I think some of my fondest memories as a kid with my family and just in general through life, I just love listening to music in the car. And this song is no exception. It would be Level Land by James McMurtry. I'm a huge advocate for James McMurtry. I think he is one of the greatest songwriters of all time. And sometimes I feel like he doesn't get the credit that he deserves. And obviously growing up in Texas, Central Texas, he was very much on my radar from an early age, just through my parents and kind of through him playing around the Austin music scene. And they would kind of take me to go see him sometimes at the Continental Club, where he still has a regular gig to this day. But around, it's actually kind of related to the Nickel Creek song in a way, because around that time when I was 11 years old, my parents were teachers, so they had the summers off, and we started driving up to Colorado every summer from Texas to go to this festival called Rocky Grass, which is outside of Boulder, Colorado. And on that drive, you have to pass through Level Land, Texas, which the song explains is a pretty lonesome landscape. And it was really kind of the first time I think I related a song to what I was seeing directly in front of me, and kind of related a song to a sense of place. And I think he has this amazing ability to kind of take a dig at a place without being totally offensive to people who might live there. I think that the people who live there could probably listen to it and be like, yeah, he's right, you know. Flatter than a tabletop makes you wonder why they stopped here is the first line. And yeah, I think I always come back to that song. It was the first song of his that I heard. So that is also, it's a special song for me in that sense, which now I just devour his music and his songs. So that Level Land was the gateway for me with his music. And it just never gets old for me. I come back to it all the time. And it's one of my favorites.
It's interesting. I can, you know, picture you as I can picture myself and remember myself in the backseat of the car with, you know, my, whatever it was, a Walkman at the time with cassettes, listening to whatever I was listening to. And yeah, that the vistas, whatever they happen to be, just heavily informing what you're listening to. I can remember that very vividly. And I don't know where I'm going with that, but I think it's interesting. But it still is a thing. I think I've certainly experienced this. I don't know if you still do as an adult as well, maybe being on a plane and having, you know, some decent noise canceling headphones on. And it does become sort of this movie scene or whatever, because the music is informing the emotional or projecting an emotional tone into whatever you're observing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel that really strongly with James's music, particularly in his way of describing landscapes and his way of describing people. And yeah, I think sometimes, especially when I feel sort of kind of in a state of despair about the state of the world. Sometimes his music comforts me in his kind of frank tone of descriptions of the way it is, and Level Land is no exception.
It's funny going back to that comment, and also to the comment of what he could get away with saying about the place without maybe enraging the populace. It's funny how some people have that quality, and it's, I don't know if you can do anything other than be born with it, you know, that sort of level of comfort of being able to do that. And you can say things other people can't. That's a really interesting aspect. I wonder if it would still be the case today if that song came out now with the current divisions. It'd be interesting to know.
It's a good question. Yeah. I mean, I think, though, it also helps that he is from Texas. So maybe it wouldn't. Yeah, that's part of why he can do it and say it, is that that's where, you know, I don't think he's from Level Land specifically, but he is from Texas, so he has some authority there.
Beyond Video is a volunteer-run video library in Baltimore. Basically, an old-school video rental store reimagined with a 21st-century nonprofit twist. Beyond offers nearly 30,000 titles from every region, era, and genre of cinema on DVD, Blu-ray, and VHS, a collection created by crowdsourcing disc donations from movie lovers like you. With no rental fees or late fees, members get unlimited rentals from their collection for a small monthly donation. Find out more about joining or donating at beyondvideo.org, or when in Baltimore, visit Beyond at 2545 North Howard Street. And for a limited time, new members who mention Essential Tremors when signing up will get an extra month for free. What do Tony Conrad, Rhys Chatham, Captain Beefheart, and Faust have in common? Each have legendary recordings on the table of the Elements record label. Long out of print, these and other records from the label are available again with the Table of the Elements Discovery Box, available only at withinthings.com. Within Things Curiosity Shop has partnered with the label to help continue their legacy of connecting sound with listeners since 1993. Visit withinthings.com and search Table of the Elements to learn more. The final piece of music Jerose chose as being crucial to her was Boy in the Bubble by Paul Simon.
And the sun was beating on the soldiers by the side of the road. There was a bright light, a shattering of shop windows. The bomb in the baby carriage was wired to the radio. These are the days of miracle and wonder. This is the long distance call. The way the camera follows us in slow-mo. The way we look to us all.
My third song, I couldn't let this go by and not include a Paul Simon song. and it's very difficult to pick one Paul Simon song. I mean, you know, but I picked Boy in the Bubble because it's funny, actually, for these three songs, too, and going in this order, I heard them in this order, like throughout, like between ages 9 and probably 17. So I think I heard that, or maybe 16 or 17, it was when I heard Boy in the Bubble for the first time. And it was just like a mind explosion of, wait, songwriting can be like this? And I think I was kind of my attention was perked up for it because I saw the VH1 Behind the Music for Graceland. And if I remember correctly, there's a scene where he talks about writing this song and kind of specifically the angels in the architecture line. And just the way that he described that, kind of writing that verse, made me pay particular attention to it. And then I think kind of working backwards from that verse through the rest of the song, paying really close attention to the lyrics. And I just felt like, wow, I've never heard a songwriter use language in this creative way. And his ability to be hyper specific, but also highly poetic at the same time, and kind of create this really detailed imagery while also kind of allowing so much space for you to create your own image with that, is incredible to me. And I think that song is a prime example of his ability to do that.
Well, I was just looking up the lyrics to get it back in my head, and that sort of slow launch, I'm trying to think if this would qualify as a chorus, but second stanza of lyrics, "These are the days of miracle and wonder. This is the long distance call. The way the camera follows us in slow-mo, the way we look to us all." I don't know. It just sends you, you know? I'd like to be more articulate about it and analytical, but it's just, as you kind of noted, like it captures something that you didn't know you knew about, I guess the way I would think of it.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's what he's always doing in his songs. And I think with this song in particular, it feels way ahead of its time in terms of what it's talking about.
Right, right.
I think I've been listening to this album for a long time now, and I always kind of come back. I feel like I come back to it kind of once a year and discover something new in it. And it, you know, with that, the way the camera follows us in slow-mo, really feels like you can almost find new meaning in it now in almost 2024. And yeah, the turnaround jump shot, you know, that whole bridge, millionaires and billionaires and babies, like,
and babies,
it's so fun.
Yeah, it is.
It's like playful. It's playful. And
well, that's such a great phrase. Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm interjecting in all the ways I said I wouldn't, but my enthusiasm is overtaking me. Yes. A loose affiliation of millionaires and billionaires and baby. It's just, I don't know. There's so much to talk about there. And I guess it's the bridge, but it's a turnaround jump shot. It's everybody jump start. It's every generation. There's a hero up the pop charts. Yeah. There's just, I don't know. It captures so much. It's so wise in some respects. And you're right. It's ahead of its time talking about days of miracle and wonder, long distance call. Feels like a presages sort of interconnectivity and all those other things, you know, from the internet. So I'm now officially hijacking the interview. Sorry.
No, it's, I'm glad it's exciting. Yeah, I think it also, I feel this way about a lot of his songs, in that the words can stand on their own and they don't, you could just read them as a poem and it would be equally satisfying almost, but then,
yep.
And I, you know, there's a lot of songs that I don't feel that way about. It's like they need the music to sort of convey the meaning, but you know, obviously in this case the music just enhances it and kind of digs in more to that sort of playful sort of creative sense.
Well, and it is very much playful. There's a lot on that record that's playful but also not going for laughs in any sort of overt way. And I guess it's the players themselves, like there's a playfulness. I'm thinking of the title track at this point, but the actual chorus for Graceland, the little tag on lick at the end of the lyric, da 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 da, which is a very African pop move. But it's very playful and brings a lightness to it.
Yeah.
Wouldn't necessarily be there otherwise.
Yeah. I don't know if we have time for this one little other, it's related to You Can Call Me Al, which is a different song, but my parents told me this story that when my mom was pregnant with me, they went to go see Paul Simon. It was actually on the Rhythm of the Saints tour. It was in 1991. But at the end of the show, Paul played You Can Call Me Al, and this was in Austin, Texas in 91, and they said the audience went so nuts and so crazy at the end of the song that he said, "You want to hear it again?" And they played the entire song twice in a row.
Amazing. That's awesome.
Which I just always have loved that story. These are the days of miracle and wonder. Don't cry, baby,
don't cry, don't cry, don't cry. This has been Essential Tremors. Essential Tremors is produced by me, Matt Byers, and Lee Gardner. Essential Tremors is distributed by WYPR Baltimore. For more information about Essential Tremors, go to essentialpodcast.com. Thanks for listening.